I would just tell young coaches to enjoy every stage of their careers. There's lessons to be learned at every step.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Coach Marsha Freese, assistant coach for the Georgia Tech women's basketball team. Coach Freese has built an impressive career in coaching with stops at some of the nation's top programs. She began her coaching journey at Ball State before moving on to Northern Illinois and then Minnesota, where she helped the Golden Gophers reach new heights. From there, she continued to make her mark with successful stints at Kansas, Illinois, and Maryland, contributing to championship caliber teams and NCAA tournament runs. Coach Freese also earned the opportunity to serve as the head coach at UMKC, where she guided the program with her leadership and vision. Along the way, she has become known for her recruiting expertise, player development skills, and ability to build strong team cultures. Currently at Georgia Tech, Freese continues to bring energy, experience, and mentorship to the Yellow Jackets program in the highly competitive ACC. Her journey is one of perseverance, growth, and impact at every level of women's basketball. In this episode, we discuss what to look for when considering if your next position is a good fit, the toughest career transition she faced and how she dealt with it, as well as the biggest lessons the transition from head coach to assistant taught her, on top of how to be the best assistant for your head coach. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Marsha Freese. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome, everyone, all you coaches out there, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You have your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, here today. Our special guest today, the assistant coach for Georgia Tech women's basketball program, Coach Marsha Freese. Coach Freese, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
No, we have for everybody that is unaware, we have a legend in our presence today. There's a lot of things that I know you're sitting over there like, what? But now the things that we can go over, the background that you have, you definitely have a lot of things that people can learn from. But first off, I guess we'll just bring you back to your roots ultimately, as we always do. And you grew up in a basketball family. I know you just mentioned too, your sister, Brenda, current head coach, for anybody out there who doesn't know, the current head coach at Maryland since 2002. So she's been there for some time. But just being a successful coach with your family background, a big basketball background, how did those family dynamics just ultimately influence your own path? Did you know you wanted to always be a coach? Was this on your sister's mind, or how did that transition?
Yeah, no, thanks for the introduction. Yeah, I think you are talking about my sister. Future Hall of Fame coach. Excited for that induction ceremony at some point in her future. But no, as you mentioned, very much a basketball family. I had five brothers and sisters, and people don't realize the family. We had two families, Brenda and myself, and my youngest sister, actually the bottom half of the family. Our youngest sister was an All-American point guard at Iowa State. Some would argue the best of the bunch. Not much argument in our family, but so no, it shaped everything we did. We came up in the right time, right place, where I think my dad really realized, like, how do you get six kids through college? Sports might be the way to do it. So, you know, the last three, we all played college basketball. My brother played college baseball. And then my two oldest sisters, the lost sisters, as we like to call them, they both played NAIA basketball. It shaped everything we did. It was family trips, and every vacation came with the basketball. If they were not basketball trips, we were absolutely finding courts to play on and play together. And it was just a natural progression of what we did. But I think coaching was always on my mind after I finished playing at Rice. But frankly, I needed a change right after playing. I ended up being at Rice for 5 years due to some injuries and things like that. I just needed a change. So I went straight into sports broadcasting. And for me, that was, I look back now and I go, that was like my master's program. Thankfully, when I went into broadcasting, I got the job immediately during basketball season. Thank goodness, because my very first week on the air was covering the girls' high school state tournament. And I was live every day for a week for 6 straight minutes. And if we had come in during like tennis season, I'm not sure. I think I would have been freaking out, but it gave me a great education on just how to connect with people and viewers and just how to be comfortable with the public speaking part of it. I think anything broadcasting, I never quite connected with the energy and the excitement of playing. I think we're all as coaches still chasing that playing mindset and that competitiveness. Brenda had been working her way up through the ranks as a grad assistant, then an assistant coach at Iowa State. So I think the timing was just right. When she got her first job, it was a conversation we had a few times. When she got her first job at Ball State, she gave me a call and said, "Hey, do you want to work for Peanuts?" I was like, "Yes, let's do it." It was a tremendous experience. We spent 4 seasons together, and yeah, it was keeping with the family ties when we got started.
Wow. Was there a point when you were doing the broadcasting stuff, and it sounds like just the competitor in you, that was the itch that kept looking over your shoulder, like you're in one kind of mode and it wasn't like you hated it. You're enjoying it. I'm sure it was fun and you still get to meet a lot of people, connect with a lot of people in that just in a different way. But that competitor in you that misses that day-to-day chase.
Yeah.
I think that's what we all kind of hunger for. So it sounds like that finally took over.
Yeah. The most fun in broadcasting was doing the live stuff. It was just like the energy and like the adrenaline that went with not messing it up. But there's a competitiveness to life. I think that's why, I don't know, we're still very much in touch with our high school coach. And sometimes I see him and I'm like, he hasn't aged at all since high school. And I think that's part of what coaches are chasing is always, there's always another season. There's always another goal. There's always another team to tend to. Coaches who have been in it a long time, your whole life is structured based on basketball season, preseason, in season, off season. My family, my sister Stacy had to change her wedding based on, we were like, "What are you crazy? This is like recruiting season. What are you doing?" Longtime coaches know there's a season now to our lives. And I've been very fortunate. I've been married 23 years and my husband has realized, oh, it's off season, you're home. So
right.
I think we're all just continuing to chase like how to be competitive and how to have goals and make goals, go try to achieve them.
And I want to reference to everybody too, just so it doesn't go under the radar. When I said a legend, obviously I know your sister's been a head coach, but there are a lot of accolades that you have reached yourself being the player, leading scorer in the state of Iowa, named Miss Iowa Basketball in 1990. And then are you still ranked 3rd all-time in career field goal percentage and the number 2 single season three-point percentage at Rice?
I have no idea. The media guides go back. I've got my paper media guides, but yeah. I have no idea. It was a phenomenal education. That's what I was also chasing.
Yeah, and that's great, especially like having that successful playing career. I mean, it's great to be able to hang your hat on and show that you were able to have those successes. But then it's, I'm sure, helpful as a coach, because I forget who it was that talked to us, Mage, but there was someone who mentioned like they don't necessarily remember the accolades you have. They remember the things, or can you help them? And I think that might have even been Mage that said that, actually. But yeah, so going off of that, is there any way that like with your playing career that you have had, all the successes that you have had, has that helped you coach?
Oh, 100%. There's a couple things that really helped me, I think, now. But obviously, the playing experience is invaluable. And I think sometimes it's downplayed in this business just across the board for young women who, you know, who are getting into this, who have played at a high level. It's preparation. It's the consistency that goes into it. I had the, like a lot of people before my last senior night or before senior night, I had torn my ACL like literally 4 weeks prior. To this day, I really like struggle with the emotions of a senior night. Like because I never had it, I never experienced it. And so when I look at our young women on senior night, I have to imagine what a difficult feeling it is on nights like that. But I think part of the value too, obviously with Coach Blair here at Georgia Tech, just that experience of understanding the grind that goes with a college basketball season, even more so now. She does rare things. She's about to give our team a fall break, several days off at fall break, which is unheard of in college athletics. But her background, her experience really helps her and all of us really relate to the young women today. If this really is a marathon, it's not a sprint. Our goal, much like Maryland's always, is to be playing in March. When you take a long-term perspective to a season, I think you make better choices and decisions for your young women rather than just the short-term gains that you might get from certain decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Was the way that you were coached growing up, and I don't know if your dad ever coached any of you as young people, but like, how has the way you were coached now influenced the way that you coach?
Oh, so different back then.
I thought I was going to say that, but I was going to let you say it.
So different. I take a lot of pride in that 6 of 6 played in college. And I don't remember any conversations of my parents pushing us to that. And it was pretty much, if you're going to do this, you're going to do this. Like, they were facilitators for sure. My dad, we had a key to our middle school, and my dad would take us up there constantly with his bat, with our ball in his little brown bag. And we wouldn't turn the heat on in the winter because this saving the school money. But he was a facilitator. He was never the one making us get up at 7 in the morning to go outside to shoot and things like that. So it very much has influenced even my own kids. I am the proud mother of a NARP. My oldest is a non-athletic regular person and thriving in college. I love that. My son is dabbling in sports. He's in 8th grade. And whenever he finishes a competition, I only ask him 2 things. I always say, did you thank your coaches and did you have fun? I know nothing about football as far as scheming. So what am I coaching him for? But it does absolutely shape. Obviously with our current student athletes, I think my daughter is the same age as our freshman. And I think the perspective I get from that role as a mom and a parent really connects me to this age bracket, because I do realize some days they are brilliant young women and some days they're struggling. And there's a whole lot of things that are factoring into why they're having good days or bad days. But I look at them sometimes and I'm like, they're not my children, but they're somebody's. And patience is a huge part of that growth process. I definitely think I'm a much more patient coach just based on how I was raised and the pressure I didn't receive from my family. It was just a competitive environment and we wanted to compete with each other. And that's pretty much how we got from A to B and into the next level.
You had enough to be running 3-on-3 anytime you went in the mornings too. You got 6 people, just roll the ball out, let them play some threes.
Listen, the Christmas games were epic. And Christmas Eve for probably 2 decades, the local YMCA, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, not a huge town, a lot of basketball tradition, not just with our family, but Robin Pinchton, who's at Wisconsin, she's a big basketball family, and Jan Jensen and her, just a ton of basketball tradition for a small city. The YMCA would let us in every Christmas Eve to play the family game. And it was hardcore until the knees got bad and the backs got bad and things, but it was hardcore. And we brought in like the future spouses and things. That was how we decided whether we'd keep them or let them go.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it was a fun environment for a lot of years, and we wish we had the knees and the hips to keep doing that. But alas, we've all retired at this point.
No, I you bring up a good point before too, and this was at least how I was raised myself, was I wasn't forced to play any sports. Like it was, now it wasn't a force. It was, I think you should try this, and you look into it. And then I just fell in love with it. It was all natural from there. But like even other sports and going off of just even raising your kids, forcing athletes, especially coaching now at the Division III level as myself, if a kid comes and's like, I don't know if I'm loving this too much, you got to let them go. Because the longer you hold on to somebody and force somebody to do something, the more love that they're going to lose for it, then it's going to not only affect them, it's going to affect everybody around them, because they're all going to get, they're not going to enjoy it as much. So it's definitely, it sounds like that was like the way your dad approached, your family approached things. And obviously stuck with you because you loved it enough to be able to be around it for as long as you guys have been. But building off of that, not having to necessarily talk about every single stop, but you have made some tremendous stops at some very high-end programs. I know you had a stint, or I should say a couple of years, where you were a head coach for five seasons over at Missouri, Kansas City. But just with the – so correct me if I'm wrong, but about nine schools so far that you have coached at: Ball State, Minnesota, Maryland, Illinois, Northern Illinois, San Diego State, Loyola, Chicago, Georgia Tech, and then Missouri, Kansas City. Well, and the only reason I bring that up is because – you, before you go into a new position, you have to know, is this going to be a good position for me? Do I like this? So what kind of things do you look for? What advice do you have for other coaches out there who are looking for that next position and wondering, is this a good school? Is this a good fit for me?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And I think the first three stops was with my sister. She was fast-tracked very young in her career, very early on, had a lot of success early. And at every stop, as she kept going higher and higher, I was a very young assistant. I was like, is this the right move for, still want me here? And fortunately she did. But you're right. I've had some challenges as far as family things and different things that would take me away here and there. But I think what I latched onto several years ago that made so much sense for me, and I think will really connect for young coaches just starting out, is I heard this podcast, and it talked about, it was a business podcast, but it connected from the standpoint of, it talked about in life, the three P's when you're making moves and making decisions in your life, the three P's: people, purpose, and place. And do they align? And when I heard it in your career, different light bulbs go off. That really stuck with me. So obviously the people part of it, who you work for and with, and that's everybody. That, you know, these staffs nowadays can get really large. What is the experience of the people around you? What is the purpose of whether it be the program itself or the institution? Is the goal winning? Is the goal surviving? Is the goal, because that changes based on where you're at. And then place is just simply geography. And are you near where you want to be? I look at some of the long tenured head coaches in the profession and some of the things that have in common. Some of them are very close to where they were born and raised, and they stay longer because of that. Bill Finley is a great example. He is just an ambassador for the state of Iowa, and he bleeds it through and through. And that is his place. He made it the place because of the purpose that he had in his program. But I can tell you, in my career, it is really difficult to get all three P's. Very difficult. So I think you find alignment, and at different stages of your career, you know, what comes to the top of that food chain. I can tell you, people have never left the top of the food chain for me. As I get older in my career and further along, place definitely plays more of a role, but people still supersede that. I think it's idealistic to be able to say, yes, follow your three P's, but it really does put a compass together for me of maybe this is the right people, but not the right time or not the right purpose. And I really try to stay centered on that and just been very fortunate to work with some really incredible leaders, and we'll continue to try to keep that at the top of my P's.
That's solid gold, Coach, honestly, because what we get with rising coaches a lot is typically it's our listening crowd tends to be younger coaches. Not that we don't have vets listening in too. They think rising coaches means like, how fast can I sometimes get there? That's part of it. But also, that's a great compass just for people to gauge by, because you can't really always control the place in terms of the choice. but you can choose the people and if you align with them or not. And typically, if the people are you're aligned with them, you're probably going to have a pretty good idea of their purpose as well. Like their purpose is probably going to align with yours. So the two P's typically at the front give you a chance. And
yes,
like I said, you can't control the third one. You might be in snowy weather in the winter, or it might be 75 and sunny in December. Like you just, that part you don't know. But the other two make the third thing bearable.
Yes,
even if you're absolutely living somewhere, even if you're living somewhere where it's minus two in February.
Been there.
If you're with, yes, me too. If you're with great people and the purpose is right and you know their hearts match your heart for what you're doing, then you can, that I just love that you said that, because we're in such a transactional phase right now in our sport that sometimes those things that the matters of the heart, so to speak, can get hurdled over in the chase of trying to make a move and, you know, what's next for me. And I had a friend of mine, he took his godson on a recruiting visit. And this guy was a former professional scout. And so he knows basketball cold, but he said the coaches were coming up to him during the recruiting visit and picking his brain on how they can become a head coach. And he's like, wait a minute, shouldn't you guys be worried about this recruit here and how you're going to get him to commit to you? Like, you're asking me about, so they were just on the wrong channel. And when he told me that, it just was another example of, in a sense, that's where we are. But it's so good that you said that, because there's going to be at least one, probably thousands of young coaches that need that will resonate with that, and that'll hit them right between the eyes.
And I think I'm on year 25, maybe. I think young coaches as well have to, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint in this business. And having watched, obviously, my sister Brenda come up as a head coach, and just watching even first-time head coaches, myself being a first-time head coach at one point, I don't always know the rush to have the pressure to have every decision be on you, on what you're thinking. As much as assistants think and are working hard and doing everything that they're doing on a daily basis, you are still never really realizing what a head coach does and the amount of time and things they put into it. And so as you reflect back on a career, I don't know if I was in a hurry, just because I was in a good situation with my sister and learned a lot in a short amount of time. But I also think, like, knowing what is out there, you have a lot of time to become a head coach if you're going to stay in this, as long as you're trying to stay in it. You really can't skip steps. Some of the things you learn being back at the mid-majors, or being at a, I had a young gal who played for us one time. I encouraged her. She had an opportunity at the D2 level. I was like, listen, if you want to do a lot and learn a lot, D2, D3, this is where you learn a lot, because you have to do a lot. It's fun to be at that next level, but if you skip the steps and you don't learn it, and the goal is to become a head coach, at some point it does catch up with you. Because if you don't know what everyone on your staff is doing, because you've had to do those jobs at one point of your career, it's really difficult to manage people. I think when I was a head coach, just understanding the seasons of recruiting helped me help our recruiting coordinator more, because I knew there were times that she was just getting slammed. So there were times of the season I'm like, nope, we're not putting any more on her plate. Or in season for Adobo, the amount of travel stuff they're dealing with, nope, not putting that on their plate. So I think just being patient in the process and looking for fit is a huge part of the parts of your career that take a little bit of a time to get to the next place.
Yeah, no, I love it. Coach, you're on a roll right now. I'm going to call it like it is. You are absolutely on a roll. Three P's, skipping steps, you are on a roll. This is
And then
so
she
good.
Threw in patience.
Yeah.
That one word there, that tells me, especially with patience, like that is the kryptonite of modern day society, I feel like. Like everybody, nobody wants to be patient. Everybody wants to be able to put on their social media that, oh, look at this I'm at Georgia Tech now, or I'm in Nebraska, or you put these big schools on there and everybody's afraid of hitting that D2, D3, like you said. So it's great to hear you say that. But even with that, you got to be able to put in the work. And that's the one thing I feel like a lot of people don't want to necessarily do, is have to put in the work. They just want to be at the top of the ladder.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as much as you talk about patience, I think young coaches also realize that being in this profession means you're going to go through challenging times. There's highs and lows to this business. And I think some of the toughest transitions I've had in this career, because it hasn't all been Power Five. It hasn't all been head coach. I've been up, I've been down. My logo's changed, all that good stuff. I think one of the toughest challenges in my career was literally I went from a Power Five to a mid-major basically overnight. Our head coach retired unexpectedly. What did that come with? My salary got cut in half. I moved to a city, the P, that I really didn't want to be at. It wasn't really where I wanted to be at that point. My husband quit another job. Don't talk about my 9 jobs. Let's talk about my husband's 12. And it's an ego kick. It's an ego kick. And so you got to realize that you're going to go up, you're going to go down. That's part of the business. You try to maintain a level of confidence, a level of self-assurance that will ride you through. But I think the biggest thing, though, some of that took for me was you really learn who you can depend on in this business. You really learn who your friends are. And that alone is worth the experience, because as I've said, I've been at different levels throughout my career. I know who my people are so strongly. And that's worth its weight in gold, honestly, just to have my ride or dies in this profession who are going to support me, whatever. And it's humbled me throughout my career. I'm not a logo chaser. I don't talk to people based on their logos. I mean, that whole thing is just madness to me. There's people you can learn from at every single level of basketball. I love fall open gyms because you learn just from great high school coaches from sitting in their gym. But I think part of transitions, what it teaches you is the resiliency you need to be like to have in this business, the adaptability you need to be like ingrained in you. And in a way, it's what our kids, our student athletes go through. You can't sit and talk about resilience to student athletes and being adaptable to student athletes if you as a coach cannot handle the transitions that come with this. Some of my toughest career moments have been the things that have propelled me forward. And I think at the end of the day, as Karen Blair, her favorite hashtag grateful, it just makes you grateful every step of the way of just the new experiences that you're able to have.
Yeah. Golly, she's preaching, man. You know what's so great about what you're saying is when you go through those moments when you're out of the profession, I call it working for FAU, which is Free Agent University. It's funny, you get someplace. It's like you really learn to sift through who's real and who isn't, because the people that didn't think you were so cool when you were out of it, all of a sudden they start reaching back out because you're cool again. And so you learn to sift through all that. But what you said is knowing who your ride or dies are is a big deal, because you don't really sometimes know that when you're in the profession. You probably had to learn that once you were out of it for a little bit. And a friend of mine who's recently let go this past spring, we've had some talks this summer, and he said, my phone isn't ringing the way it used to. I'm like, that's not the worst thing in the world, because sometimes your phone needs a refresh. And that refresh lets you know who's really supposed to be in there. And once you know who's really supposed to be in there, that's as good a thing as you can ever figure out.
Yeah. Listen, I've never been cool, even when I was early in this profession. I learned a long time ago, I'm not trying to be anything I'm not. I think student athletes probably respect authenticity more than whatever role. Our director of ops the other day was giving me grief. She goes, "Can you wear some different shoes, please?" I have 2 pairs. and they're super comfortable. And I'm like, I'm good. I'm not trying to overload my closet right now. But I think consistency is a huge part of that. But it's like you said, I am that coach that when people like go through things or they let go for various reasons. Like I'm reaching out to people, like people I don't even know sometimes. And I don't expect it to be necessarily a long-term relationship, but because people always have their people, but I've been through it often enough and unexpectedly enough that it's really isolating at times. And so if I have any sliver of a connect with people, I do try to reach out because I want people to know they're not alone in what they're going through and they're going to be okay. They will. It takes time and it takes effort and things. But I think this community of coaches can be really powerful when it's put to work in positive ways. And I think it can be really isolating sometimes as well. So I just try to put more positivity into it just because I know how much it's meant to me over the years, the people who have stayed connected, things like that.
I'm with you. Absolutely. Never going to have enough of that. No doubt.
No. And it's great to set, like to hear the genuineness for you reaching out to people, especially going through the, like a loss of jobs or something like that. Cause I feel like that is, I don't know. Sometimes it's hard, especially, and that even gives people a way to connect with other coaches too. As you said, whether you know them or not, a lot of times people, especially like younger coaches are thinking, how do I connect with those other coaches? Yeah, obviously you have to get a way to connect with them first, like a number, email, something like that. But, or if you see them out in person, but at least now you have a way to be able to reference them, follow up with them, check in with them, just genuine things like that. It's something that I've learned to do is just shoot somebody a text. Hey, they pop up in your mind. Hey, how you doing? Just thought of you. Hope all is well. That's it. Like you don't have to actually shoot them a whole paragraph. They have a lot going on. They probably don't even want to read all of it. You just shoot something over. Because I've gotten texts before from friends or people who I haven't talked to in a while and said, hey, thought of you. Hope all is well. And nothing means more. You're like, oh. Like it hits you. You're like, oh crap. Okay. So I just, once I got that one time, I'm like, all right, let's kind of keep this a consistent thing.
Yeah. I think if there was a skill that I would try to share with young coach is just consistency that's needed in this profession on all levels, whether it be just the work itself of always showing up and always being ready for that. But just the relationship part is huge. And even I hear it sometimes from the more experienced high school coaches and club coaches. And they'll be like, Marsha, like these coaches, they only reach out when they want something. And I'm like, yeah, they're new. They're young. It takes time to build relationships and connections. But there is a grit to that. I tell players, I think sometimes we overlook players that show up every single day. As a coach, if somebody's not doing the right thing or not in the right headspace, that's where all our attention goes. But for a player that shows up every single day and doesn't take that oxygen from a team, that's a talent. That's a gift. And I think as a coach, you got to be really cognizant of those kids too, because just because they make it look easy doesn't mean it is. If it was, everybody would do it. So I think that's a skill and a talent for young coaches as well, like reaching out to those coaches when they have players, when they don't, reaching out to coworkers, when they're up, when they're down. I think all of that, if you're a connector of people, all of that matters to you. And I'm fortunate to say in my career, there are high school coaches and club coaches that I consider friends that I've known for that long. And we've had those type of relationships. And that itself is a gift in this profession as well. So I certainly encourage people to do that. My family in particular we're a crazy birthday family. Once I know your birthday, Brenda's like this, my mom, once we know a date, you're going to hear from us pretty much for the rest of your life. And people are always like, how do you remember all those birthdays? And I'm like, Surrey calendars?
Right.
It's not hard to be intentional. It has to matter to you that those days are special to people. So it takes effort to be consistent, but I don't think it's a skill that you can't acquire. I think it's definitely something that you can be if it matters to you.
No doubt. No, that's phenomenal. Just being genuine. Now, there is one thing that I wanted to ask, too, especially as we mentioned in the beginning, too, you had some head coaching experience for 5 years. And then going from there, you go back into an assistant. Now, I know you've been an assistant for what it was, UMKC, and then to San Diego State, Loyola, and then Georgia Tech, where you are now. So you've had a couple stops as an assistant in between. But thinking back on being that head coach, was there anything during that five-year stint that you still hold on to as an assistant now? And off of that, how did being a head coach help you be a better assistant?
Yeah, I think number one, you just learn, don't bring problems unless you bring in solutions. That's number one. Is I think head coaches need to know what's going on sometimes behind the scenes and where there are gaps in that stuff. But I also think they need to have the solutions that go with them and solutions that potentially they don't have to be involved in if that's the case. I think it's also just how you can add value of any kind. Head coaches have a lot on their plate. I try to ask frequently for every head coach I work for is like a random off day, I'll text or call and go, is there anything I can take off your plate? And that's different from just saying, let me know if you need anything. What can I take off your plate today? And it might be something super mundane, but it's on their plate. I worked for a head coach once who was always worried about the birthdays on staff or the birthdays, and which was phenomenal, but she didn't need to be going to get the cupcakes. Like, somebody, we can take that off her plate, being there to add value. And I think I already knew this lesson prior to being a head coach, but really nailed it down of just always trying to be over-prepared and really being able and willing to adapt when needed. I always say, I'm not somebody who likes to wing things. I like to really be prepared. But when I'm prepared and then things happen, I'm going to wing it and I'm going to be okay with it. Yeah. What I'm not going to be unprepared and wing. Like, my brain doesn't work in that direction. I do. I think you learn a lot of things as a head coach that will make you be a better assistant. And hopefully the last several years of my career, I've tried to bring those back to the table as well.
Yeah, for sure. Was there like a first head coaching moment that you remember? Maybe it's not your first game. Maybe it was preseason practices leading up to it. Maybe it was a few games in your first year.
It wasn't even a first game. We had, because there were a couple of those. My first game, I felt like my first day on television, scared out of my mind. When I had an experienced coach on staff that I leaned into that year and was very grateful for that experience. Probably one of my favorite games was going into Kansas and winning on their home court with a somewhat young team, mainly sophomores. And back then, like, they had no idea what a guarantee game was. And like, of course, we weren't expected to win. Our administration didn't even come to the game. None of it. And I just remember my husband's face after the game. And I remember asking the girls if they wanted to go spend some of our winnings on ice cream. And they were like, what winnings? Yeah. So it's really just the moments with the student athletes that I'm still very connected to a lot of them. And just those fun moments with them that you get to experience at the age that they're at that time.
Those wins are a little sweeter.
Early.
Because they pay you to come and play, and then you beat them, then you take the check home with you. Yeah. That's like,
And obviously, during that time, Brenda was always like, come to Maryland, play, it'll be great. And I'm like, I have a little bit of a math background, and I'm like, Brenda, the math doesn't even make sense. It'll cost me 20 to get there. You're not even paying me enough. I can go down the road and be good to go. I was like, good offer, but you might need to add a few more dollars to that before.
There you go. Love you, sis.
Now that's thanks business amongst time. Family, and I love it.
There we go. That's right.
No, I want to shed light on one thing, and then we'll get to our final question. But you said this a minute ago following the last question, and I absolutely love this because this was something that happened to me recently. Someone was talking, and they mentioned, I never get nervous or anxious. And I was thinking, I mean, like, why is that? And you were talking about that. And then ultimately, I started thinking about it after I walked away from that conversation. I was like, the only time, if you think about whenever you're nervous or anxious about something, maybe you're nervous about going into a game, maybe you're nervous about practice, maybe you're nervous about something, it's because you're ill-prepared. That's all it typically is. If you're nervous going into a game, that's probably because you maybe be you didn't do the scouting report, you don't know the plays that they're going to be running. Maybe you didn't prepare well enough or something like that. But if you're nervous and going into something, now maybe that's not always the case, right? But I'm talking more in basketball terms. You're either ill-prepared or you're just not ready for it. And that kind of started resonating with me. Is if I ever start to get nervous or anxious lately, it's I wonder why. Am I not prepared for this? Have I not done the research for this? Done the work prior to? Because if you do go into something, usually you're prepared for it.
Yeah, no. And I think that's for me that it, when I was a first time head coach, yeah, you are very aware of what you don't know. And that's just a time element of that process of speeding up time. And I remember even that off season, just threw myself into film study of trying to accelerate the time, especially in end of game situations. Because until you're standing on that sideline, it's you don't get that experience. But you're right about the anxious. Like I get excited for games now. I don't really get anxious. I very much get anxious watching Maryland women's basketball or watching my niece play in the state tournament. Or as a family, you find that when you are not sitting courtside and don't have the ability to influence anything as far as the way the game goes, that's terrible. It's just terrible. So our family thread during basketball games, whether it be my games or Brenda's games or my niece, the family thread be popping. And it's, we got to stop each other sometimes. We need to call, we need to. So it is, it's when you don't have any ability to influence outcome that you get very anxious. But sitting courtside, it's fun. It's fun. You get excited about big games.
Yeah. So what we typically do is we like to just wrap it all up now and just put the final question. And really all it is, if we were to bring you back to your first coaching position, or I should say in the beginning of your coaching career, knowing what you know now, what advice would you share with your younger self going through this profession?
The advice I would share with myself is it's a marathon, not a sprint. You don't need to try to speed up the development process of yourself or the student athletes because it's going to happen. You learn the lessons when you're ready to learn. That counts for student athletes. It counts for yourself. I've always placed more value in my relationships with the student athletes long term. I think we referenced it early in this interview was just they really don't remember the offensive sets they were in. They don't remember certain aspects of the game, but they do remember how you made them feel. They do remember that you continued to show up for them when things were hard on and off the court. Those relationships are gold. So I would just tell young coaches to enjoy every stage of their careers. There's lessons to be learned at every step. There's resiliency to be developed. There's attitudes to remember and learn from and just enjoy the process, because next thing you know, you're 25 years in and you're wishing you could do it all over again.
Well said. Man. Coach, this has been so good. We know the wheels are turning and you guys are really busy, but just thank you so much for doing this. Like I said, our whole point for bringing people on this pod, Dougie and I talk about all the time, is will the profession be better? It's not about choosing this person's a riser and this person isn't. We don't do that. This is more about who's going to help the profession grow and make our game better by being on this platform. And so you hit it out of the park today. So this was so good. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Of course. Thank you for being on it. And hey, the Miss Iowa being on our podcast, be able to talk about some hoops, the tremendous coaching background, coaching family that you have. And then I do have to say, I would love to be on a fly. Now, I understand those aren't going on. I'll fly on the wall for those YMCA games because I'm sure those are hilarious.
They're competitive.
The competitiveness.
They're rough. They're rough.
No, but thank you very much for being on here. We really do appreciate it. And for everybody out there listening, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.